Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our talk show for the morning. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to have back here on the program Brian Johnson. He's professor of journalism in the Department of Journalism, and his thing is photography. He teaches photojournalism, and before being a teacher, he was a newspaper photographer, and he's a guy who knows a lot about taking pictures. And every once in a while, he's here on the program, and we talk about photography, give people an opportunity to ask questions about cameras, about film, remember film, and about technique. And if you have any of those kinds of questions, whether you're somebody who is very serious, maybe you're a pro or a serious hobbyist, or you're just going to be taking snapshots and you're going to take them on family occasions and you're going to take them when you go on trips, and you just want to take the best pictures that you can. We've talked about all of that sort of thing. And if you have questions, you can call us. And I know Brian will do his best to give you an answer. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Oh, yeah. Glad to be here.
I tried to find a number. What I really wanted to do was find a number that said, you know, in the run-up to Christmas, X number of new digital cameras were sold, and I'm sure it's a gazillion. I'm sure that it's a lot.
You know, I would have looked for that number had you, you know, prepped me for
Well,
it.
Next time I'll say, okay, look, come up with a number.
But I do know that Apple sold 730,000 iPods in December.
Well, that's another.
Not that that's going to help us, but
it's another an indicator about the move to being a digital world rather than, you know, what it was before.
I mean, the digital photography realm has just exploded. I mean, you know, again, we've been talking about this for 5 or 6 years now, but really in the last couple of years, particularly in the last, starting last year, and then last year meaning like the end of 2002 and to 2003, I guess, which is technically the last year now. There's just been an explosion in the digital cameras.
Well, here you came in and you have it in front of you on the counter. We have a copy of the magazine Popular Photography, and right at the top it says "Film: Why We Still Love It."
Why we still love it.
What are there some things that you can do an amazing amount of things with the digital image? If you have Photoshop or one of those kind of programs and you have a computer, you can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Right,
and then just push a button and you have a print.
Right.
But are there still some things that you can do with film that you cannot do with the digital?
Sure. Well, I think the largest strong point of film is that its exposure latitude, meaning the tones from light to dark that it can capture, like in a color negative film, that's still a wider range than what you can get with a typical digital camera, particularly when you're talking about the highlight areas, like the brightest parts. In a digital image, if your highlights are blown out or they're just pure white, there's no data there. There's no way to bring out detail. Whereas with film, those highlight areas still have it. There's still detail in those highlight areas that you can recover when you're making a print. So that's to me right now, that's what I see as the greatest strength of film and probably the greatest weakness of the digital stuff is really how the cameras handle highlights and how film can retain the detail in those highlights.
Photojournalists have been using digital for probably as long as there's been digital,
right?
Because it gives them the advantage of they can take the image and then they can electronically transmit it. So if there's
exactly
a deadline, they can take the picture and shoot it to wherever it's going to
right.
go. For other kinds of pros that don't have that kind of deadline, you expect those people are going to continue to shoot film?
You know what? There even a lot of the pros are moving towards digital now because the greatest strength of digital, I think, is that you can see the image immediately. So, you know, and particularly for a commercial photographer that has a whole tabletop setup, he or she is maybe photographing jewelry. Well, they can see right there, how do my highlights look? You know, how do my shadows look? How is this overall image working? And so I know a number of pros that just within the past year have gone to digital. Part of what it was, Canon introduced a professional 35 millimeter style camera that has a full 35-millimeter size imaging sensor, and it also has 11 megapixels.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Kodak came out with the camera that has 14 megapixels. So, you know, mostly the Canon, but also the Kodak thrown in there. That's what's really driven a lot of pros over the edge. We're saying, you know, we had these, you know, $10,000, $15,000 imaging backs that we could use with our professional larger format cameras. Well, now we've got this really easy to handle 35 millimeter size that has a high megapixel count. So what's going to stop me from doing it?
And for people who know nothing about megapixels, and I don't really, the important thing to know is the more megapixels, the
bigger
more detail.
Is better. Right.
Bigger is better. Yeah. Bigger is better. Yeah. The more detail, the sharper image that you're going to get.
Hopefully the sharper, but it's going to record on an 11 megapixel chip. It's going to record 11 million data points. Or if you could look at that photograph and break it up into a grid, there would be 11 million little, you know, cells on that grid.
As opposed to, there are some cameras now that, you know, maybe you
like
you
know
five,
right? You know, four, you know, 3 and 4 megapixels are sort of your standard for your point and shoot variety. Mm. You know, 3 million, 4 million pixels. That's still plenty good for most kind of casual shooters.
Yeah. But so you can sort of imagine what the difference we're talking about in terms of if you think about it being broken up into grids, how fine an image, the difference between you're virtually doubling the kind of detail.
Right. Right, exactly. So it gives you better detail, and it also lets you enlarge the photo more, I guess. Is another way to think of it.
We have a couple callers here. Why don't we go right to them and start with Chicago and line number one. Hello.
Yes, hello. I've recently acquired a digital camera and have had pretty good luck in taking pictures with it and blowing them up to 8.5 by 11. It's a 5 megapixel camera.
Uh-huh.
Now, but what I'm wondering is, I've been using a regular inkjet printer for this. What kind of equipment is there available if I want to go to, say, something like 11 by 14 or even 16 by 20 prints?
Sure. You know, there are some of the inkjet printers that will go to those larger sizes. I know that Epson, for instance, has one that will print 13 inches wide by, and I think it'll even print like, you know, 44 inches long, possibly even larger than that. You know, there, and depend upon how much further up you want to go, there are also some inkjet printers that are available that, in the grand scheme of things, I guess, aren't that expensive, where they can print, you know, 24 inches wide, 36 inches wide. There are some that'll even go, you know, 50 inches wide.
Yeah, well, I'm not going quite that far.
Right,
but
right.
I was thinking something at least 11 inches wide.
Right, right. Yeah, and so there are inkjet printers out there that'll go to those sizes. And, you know, again, I mean, they aren't horribly priced.
Yeah, so Epson is one of them that manufactures something like that.
Right. Now, there's also an option, too, if you go to kind of a, well, since I don't know what, you know, some of the discount houses has, I know that a lot of the pro photo finishing places, they'll have printers that can print on photographic paper from your digital file. So, for instance, here in Champaign, we have two different photo finishers that have a device that'll print up to 30 inches wide by up to, I guess, 100 feet long.
Oh.
So that might be another option, too, that you keep your inkjet printer that you have right now. And for the things that you do want larger, you could, you know, take your file in to one of those photo finishing places.
Yes.
That has the larger printer.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Aurora for our next caller. This is line 4. Hello.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
This is very timely for me, and I thank you for the program. I wanted, we have two new members in the family. One is a 12-year-old girl, and one is a 15-month-old girl. And I wanted to get pictures of the new family members. And so I gave my son-in-law an assignment. Find a camera, a moving camera, that he could know how to run.
Right.
And that I would in time learn how to run, and we could take pictures at Christmas opening up the gifts.
Sure.
And so he worked with his son, and neither of them could come up with anything that they thought they could understand, and so we never got the camera. What is there in the camera now, or should I use new terminology?
No, I mean, that's totally fine. You know, most of the cameras will have what's called a simple shooting mode, where you just...
Really?
Yeah, where the camera does everything. It'll focus for you. It'll set the exposure. It will decide whether or not to use the flash. And
I'm talking about moving.
I think you're talking about a video camera, right?
Well, you know...
No, I'm talking about anything that makes... that catches movement.
Right. You know, and even the video cameras, like on the Canon cameras, for instance, they have a mode that, for lack of a better term, I'm not sure what their exact term is, but I always call it the green rectangle mode, because the symbol on the little dial is a little green rectangle. You put it in that mode. All you need to do is you press a button to start the camera, and you just, you know, look through the little viewfinder, and everything you can see is what it's going to record. And then when you're done recording, you press the little red button again, and it stops recording.
So how much does that cost?
The lowest end one of the Canon, it's the ZR60.
ZR60?
Yeah, ZR60. I've seen it for about $360.
Well, see, my Tops was $400.
Sure. You know, and
and what kind of screen do you show those on?
You plug it into your TV.
Well, that's better yet.
Yep, you just show it right on your TV. So,
I wonder why they couldn't do it. Maybe it was too close to Christmas.
Right, yeah, and, you know, who knows what the results
were. So give me the numbers again.
Sure, it's a Canon, and it's a ZR60. And
what does Kodak do in that area?
You know what? Kodak really isn't in the video market.
I knew that. I read, yeah. But I heard that they were going to try to be in the video market.
Yeah, and maybe they'll go, but I haven't seen anything from Kodak in the video market.
Okay, my next question is, Canon made in America?
No, it's a Japanese company.
Well,
are there any cameras made in America?
Yeah, I honestly can't say that there are any cameras made in America. I'm sure there are some specialized cameras that are definitely made here, but as far as a mass market camera, I don't know of one.
Well,
maybe one of our listeners out there might know.
Well, Japan is better than China anyway.
You know, and actually all this equipment now, lots of it is being made in China, too. So,
what is that camera my daughter has? She tries to explain it to me. Something about taking very tiny pictures and then they get blown up. What is that?
I don't know. It could be a digital camera. It could, you know, there are also some film cameras that you get little snapshots from. I'm not sure.
Okay. Thanks much.
Sure.
Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Our guest is Brian Johnson. He's a professor of journalism at U of I. He teaches photojournalism and is occasionally here on this program when we talk about cameras and picture taking. And if you have questions, whether you're still interested in film or you're interested in getting into the digital photography, you can give us a call. 333-9455 and toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Kankakee, line number one. Hello.
Yes. Hello, David. Another fine program. On a different topic for Mr. Johnson, I just wonder if he's familiar at all with digiscoping, which is basically the use of a digital camera and shooting through a birding scope to take nature shots. It's been around for about... 3-4 years now, and just looking at some of the photographs on the internet, it's pretty phenomenal what people are doing with fairly minimal investment.
Sure. So tell me what you end up with then.
Most of the cameras that are being used are the Nikon Coolpix, the 995, the 4300.
Uh-huh. And then tell me about the image that you get in the end.
Well, the images you can see on the internet are some are pretty amazing. Some of the fellows that are using the 80 millimeter scopes with these Nikon Coolpix cameras, and they're attaching them to the back of their scope, and they use a manual shutter release so as not to vibrate the equipment.
Sure, sure.
And a fairly sturdy tripod.
Uh-huh.
And
so,
it's just, I mean, for the kind of money that, where you're talking maybe $2,000-$3,000 for all the equipment involved compared to, say, $10,000-$20,000 for, you know, regular telephoto lenses. And
right.
And I do some of it myself, but on a little smaller scale. I use a 60-millimeter scope, but you can still take some pretty decent shots. And most of us start out doing it just as verification on
what you
rare
saw.
Birds,
right? Sure.
And unusual birds and nature shots of all different sorts. But it's just something I thought I'd mention.
Yeah.
Because a lot of folks aren't aware of it, and it's coming on pretty strong. And there are companies now working on spotting scopes.
Sure.
With built-in digital cameras.
Right. Right. And so basically, what it is, it's a spotting scope. And a camera that has an adapter on it, so you can
exactly
photograph through
the eyepiece. And just so folks are aware that it's out there, and it's, I think probably within the next 5 years, almost anybody's going to be able to take pretty high quality nature shots.
Sure.
At up to 50 to 100 yards.
Cool. So. Yeah, that sounds neat. You know, and I think having a digital camera built into the spotting scope would be a really cool idea, too.
There'd be some real advantages, and I think
exactly.
Once they go to the remote shutter release,
right?
So you don't have to touch anything.
Right.
And the image stabilizer lenses, which Canon uses in some of their binoculars.
Right, yeah, they actually have some photographic lenses that have that technology built into it.
I think we're on the cusp of something pretty significant as far as nature photography. So I'll hang up and let it go with that.
Okay.
Again, unless you have any questions.
Okay, great. No, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for the call. I guess that again shows you how the tools have advanced and have become affordable, so that serious hobbyists and,
sure.
and talented amateurs can do the kinds of
sure.
things that maybe once only pros with very expensive equipment would
right.
be able to do.
Right. You know, one thing that's happened recently too is that. Canon has introduced their Digital Rebel camera, and it's a camera that for the body of the camera, that means the camera without the lens, sells for $900. But it's a 6-megapixel camera, and it takes interchangeable lenses. Mm-hmm. So if you spent $1,000 on that, and then you could get a pretty high power telephoto lens, you know, for another $1,000 or $1,500. So for $2,500, you know, if we're talking about, you know, having a really nice spotting scope and putting a digital camera connected to it, this would give you a 6-megapixel camera and a really good telephoto lens connected to it, you know, for about $2,500. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's see, we have somebody on a cell phone, so we'll get them. On line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right, great. I have one question. I'm trying to help out a friend. She's getting married next month, and there's always the budget involved. I'm trying to help her get a little project done for her wedding. What I'm looking to do is she was wanting to have some photographs displayed in sort of a slideshow.
Right.
But is there any kind of media that you would know of? Because I'm going to try to scan them into my computer and burn them on a disc.
Sure.
Is there a media that you can display that on that's like from a computer to like say a large screen?
Right. You know, all that you need is an LCD projector. There's a variety of them out there. The cheapest I've seen them is for about $1,000.
Do you know, are there places that rent such equipment?
There are places that rent the equipment, but you will gasp, but normally they want to charge about $300 a day.
Wow.
To rent it. I mean, $300 for a day is still cheaper than, you know, $1,000 to buy it. But
is there anything like a slide projector for digital images?
No, I mean, that's basically, you know, what this is it's a projector for the digital files, and that's just kind of what they...
That's kind of
what they're selling for.
Hmm. So. Okay, well... that's what I was trying to find out, what kind of equipment it was, and that'll help me out a lot.
Yeah, sure. No, and it looks, you know, very, very good. I was just at a wedding on Saturday. A friend of mine had done a really nice slideshow, and he also had some video and old 8mm movie thrown in there, and it really came off nicely.
Yeah, I don't know whether they have that kind of media, because I would really love to, like, make a little slideshow like that, too. I have a Mac, and it's pretty easy to do those little movies on. Has a really nice program on there, and I've made a couple movies, and they've turned out really well, so I'm really pleased with that. I just don't think I have
right.
the media to take from 8mm to video.
Right.
I don't have that software.
Right, right. If you're using iMovie to do those slideshows, in the newer, they just introduced a brand new version of iMovie yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
I have to go download, right?
That's it. I think it's not going to be available till February, maybe, but... there's supposedly some better titles in it, but there's also, I know in version 3, there's version 4 was the one I introduced yesterday, but in version 3, there's also kind of a slideshow tab in it to make doing the slideshows even easier.
Oh, great. Thanks for the info.
All right. Thanks for the call. Again, we'll keep on going here. We have another cell phone caller here on line one. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that if you do get an LCD projector, you can, of course, use it to watch television with, as long as you have a cable input. So
yes.
It goes way beyond that. So you really, I've never understood why people look at large screen TVs, why they don't just simply get one of these business presentation LCD projectors for $1,000 or $1,500. That works perfectly well, even on a plain white wall.
Absolutely.
I wanted to mention that.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that's actually true. When I built my house, up in the ceiling of our room where we have the TV, I have all the connectors. So if I ever spend the money to get the projector, that's exactly right. You can get one of these projectors, and you have a pretty decent image at a pretty large size. And $1,000 is cheaper than, you know, $3,000 for a plasma TV.
Okay. And again, to another caller here. This will be on line number two, and the caller is in Champaign. Hello.
Hello there.
Yes.
My question has to do with a RIP. What I know about it is that if the fellow that wanted to print large reminded me of this question.
Right.
That if you take your picture or anything to a printer, they need to have a RIP, and if you want to print it on your own printer, you have to have a RIP, and they never tell what the acronym means or give an explanation.
Sure.
They assume that you know everything. So
right.
What's a RIP and
okay.
What do I want with it?
Well, you really don't necessarily need a RIP. What a RIP is, it stands for Raster Image Processor. And, you know, most of the inkjet printers, by the time they're connected to the computer, the data that the computer sends to the printer is already rasterized. It's already set up so that the individual dots are where they need to be so it can print it easier. Normally where you need a RIP is if you're taking like a PostScript file or like a page layout, and there's some PostScript data in there that's in there's a different type of format. It's called a vector format. Then it needs to take that vector information and transfer it into a more of a raster image. So for the most part, you don't really need a RIP unless you're printing PostScript files to the printer, because digital picture files are already raster images.
Well, that's a relief.
Yeah.
Because they said that Hewlett-Packard doesn't have one that works with Macintosh OS X, and I was thinking about getting a a good digital camera and was concerned that I wouldn't be able to.
Sure, sure. You know, Hewlett-Packard printers work great with Macintoshes. My parents have a fairly new Hewlett-Packard printer, and they've got OS X, and it works totally fine. We're using the printer sharing with the HP, and it was perfectly fine.
Okay.
Yeah, so that shouldn't be a problem at all.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Other questions are welcome. Again, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455.
So I was just looking at, I always like to bring some magazines and catalogs here just to look up some of these things. Uh-huh. Canon makes an inkjet printer that'll print 13 by 19. It's $500. The Epson printer that'll go 13 by 44, that's $649. That's a 7-color printer. Mm-hmm. The Canon was a 6-color printer. HP has one they're advertising here that'll print 24-inch wide sheets, and it's $995. So that gives you some options there.
A lot of people, they're using their printers, the ones that they have for their computer, to print pictures. And they'll do a great job. You'll get something that looks good. But some people might look at the image and say, that doesn't look like a photograph. Somehow we have the idea of what a photograph is supposed to look like.
Right.
Are there some options if that's what you want, if you're looking for something that looks more like a traditional photograph?
You know what it is? Most of it comes down to the paper that the image is printed on. It's not so much the image as the paper itself. In my lab, I have a color laser printer. And I have some really nice regular paper, but it's real bright white, real kind of nice finished paper. But my students, some of whom have inkjet printers at home, saying, you know, well, how did so-and-so get that print? It was a lot more like a photograph. Well, it was because the paper was thicker and heavier, a little stiffer. Mm-hmm. With the inkjets, you can get really nice paper. So it basically is very photographic. And the inkjet printers produce a phenomenal print. It's a phenomenal print, and particularly like the, you know, like this Epson and the Canon. I mean, you know, when they have 7 colors, what they do, the 4 colors that you need to get a full full color print is, the 4 colors are cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. Not that black's really a color, but we'll just throw it in there as a color. What they do with these 6 and 7 color printers is they'll have a cyan and a light cyan, and a magenta and a light magenta, a yellow and black, and then sometimes they'll have a light black or a gray ink. Mm-hmm. So that just gives you this beautiful tonal range on those prints. They've also done a lot with the light stability and the environmental stability of the inks that they're using on the inkjet, so that, you know, they're saying they can last for 50 or 100 years.
Well, that's better than a photograph.
It is better than a photograph in a lot of instances. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Champagne, I think, next, line number 2. Oh, no, that's Bourbon A, I guess, line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I don't know very much about it, but it just struck me, the lady who's trying to set that situation up for her wedding.
Yes.
Could she do something with PowerPoint?
Absolutely. She can, you know, PowerPoint will do those slideshows like that. You know, most of the free or inexpensive movie making programs will do a slideshow like that. And I think her real problem was not so much that part of it, but then how does she get it from her computer to the screen?
Yeah. How do you show it?
Right.
That was the
question. And, but I think the last caller brings up an excellent point that you don't have to have a movie, you know, making package. Programs like PowerPoint will do those kind of slideshows too. So I, you know, there are many programs out there that'll do the same sort of thing.
Okay. Let's talk with someone in Charleston. Line 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I just flew back from Southern California, and they said if you have undeveloped film in your suitcase and it goes through the X-ray things,
yep,
that it would ruin it.
Yep.
And I have an undeveloped film. It was in my camera case. And
did you carry on your camera case?
It went through the security check thing.
But did it was it in your suitcase and went through the suitcase X-ray, or did you carry it on and went through the security X-ray?
No, it went. It was in my suitcase and went through the suitcase X-ray.
Okay, because the suitcase X-ray is the bad one. So
you think that film is probably not any good?
Well, it's. I don't know, because it depends on if it got X-rayed and if the machine was, you know, how it was set up. I would still have it processed. If it's ruined, sometimes what it does is it sort of, the whole film has sort of a kind of a pink cast to it. It's sort of hazy looking.
Okay.
But you still have images there. So I would still have it processed. And, you know, I've seen some examples from it, and you still have images there. They're just not anywhere near as nice as they might have been.
What if I hadn't taken any pictures? It was just in the camera. Is that
if there's film that was in the camera that went through the suitcase X-ray, I would not bother shooting that film.
Okay.
Yeah. If it's film that you haven't shot yet, I wouldn't risk it because, you know. How much is a $2 roll of film worth when compared to your memories of a birthday party or, you know, some other big event?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks. So again, here, the bottom line is if you're traveling with film and camera, what you want to do is carry it on and have it go through the screening.
Right.
The same thing when you put your coat and your shoes.
Right,
and
exactly.
You know, whatever, that thing that it goes through right at the gate, as opposed to checking it and have it be in your suitcase.
Right. Now, the thing that people need to remember, too, is that the effect is cumulative. So if you've got the same roll of film in your camera bag and you travel a lot, I would try to either shoot that film on your trip so that you can get it developed and be done with it, or, I guess, rotate your film through. You know, don't let it go through more than, you know, one trip's worth of security checks. But the suitcase X-ray, I know that's not a great term for it. I'm just kind of coming up with that here. But it's a very high-powered X-ray, so they can get in through your suitcases. Yeah, that's the stuff that's really bad.
Okay. Other questions, welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. One of the things I was thinking about is that, you know, now that more and more people are interested in digital cameras and there are more of them out there.
Right.
The people who make the cameras have been clued in the fact, we really should provide people with some way to print the picture.
And oh, yeah.
Now a lot of manufacturers are selling kind of as a package, or trying to sell as a package, camera and a printer that they make.
Right.
Specifically to go with the camera, so that then you take your pictures and all you got to do is plug it into this little printer that you have. And
right.
There you go. You got your picture.
Right. You know, there are a couple, just like there was an explosion in camera design philosophies when the digital cameras came out, the same thing's happening with printers now, where there are some dockable cameras where you've got this little printer base and you plug your camera into it and it spits out 4x6 snapshot size prints. So that's one thing that's happening. There's another thing that's happening where the camera has technology built into it that will talk to the printer so that it'll go directly to the printer and you don't have to have a computer. Mm. Then there's another technology that's coming out. Well, that's not coming out. It is out now, where you just take your little memory card from your camera and you plug it in your printer. And a lot of these printers have a little LCD screen built into them. Little being the operative word, some of them are like, you know, 2 inches.
Stamp.
No, they are. They're pretty small. But you can see the picture. Mm-hmm. So that's one technology. Hewlett-Packard came out with this kind of cool technology where you'd plug your card in. It would print out what we photographers would call a contact sheet. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Bunch of little pictures on it. And then it would also have a little bubble underneath each picture. How large do you want this picture? Do you want to print this picture at all? And so then you would put that that contact sheet with a little bubble sheet, you know, markers underneath the photos, and you would scan it in to the printer because it's one of the all-in-one units. And then it would then say, okay, they wanted this picture, this picture, this picture, and then it would print out those pictures in those sizes.
The nice thing about these various things is that, I guess, if all you want to do, say if you just want to take snapshots and you just want a snapshot size print, then it's easy.
Right.
It's no big deal. I guess I'm thinking about how many people might initially say, hey, that's cool. It's easy. We'll just, you know, write one check here and we'll get the whole package. And then
right.
you might later think, but I wish I could do something more to manipulate the image.
Right.
And with this system,
right.
That's not an option. You just get it prints what you shoot, and there's no messing around.
Right, right. And something that where a lot of people get, I don't know if I want to say fooled or tricked or if it's just the marketing system now, but inkjet printers are sold under the old safety razor marketing method, where you give away the razor. No, you give away the shaver.
Oh yeah.
But then you make
them
buy
the blades.
Yeah, that's it. And that's exactly what's happened, is that they're basically giving away the printers, but then you're paying, you know, $40, $50, $60 for a full set of inks. And if you're printing photographs, it's just sucking that ink out as yeah. quickly as can be.
And then do you have to buy the inks from the manufacturer of the printer?
You don't absolutely have to, but you know what? I think it's advisable to do that, because they've, you know, all of the color calibrations and things that are built, that's built in a lot of the software, counts on the fact that they're using the manufacturer's inks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in essence, it's probably the best thing to do. So by the time you've, you know, put in, you know, 10 sets of inks, you've just spent $600, mm-hmm. which makes some of the color laser printers out there that are now coming down in the, you know, $1,000, you know, $700, $600 price range, not really looked at expensive, because the price per print from a laser printer is quite a bit lower than it is from an inkjet. Mm. I'm not sure that the image quality is quite as good as the inkjets, but, you know, again, you've got to decide for yourself, where do you want to weigh in on this? Is it optimum print quality or my cost per print?
All right. Another caller here, someone on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question for you. I have a Hewlett-Packard 7350 picture printer.
Uh-huh.
And also my camera is an Olympus 4-megapixel camera.
Right.
And when I take the smart card out of the Olympus and put it into the printer, it will give me that little sheet that you were talking about, and I can see them on my computer. But when I take the smart card out of the reader on the printer and put it back in my camera, the camera doesn't recognize there's any pictures on it.
Oh.
And is there something that goes on inside of a printer that would change that card?
I'm not going to give you an exact answer on this, but I do know that different devices will, I don't want to say format the card, because that's not what's happening, but the card gets identified as being from that device. So, so for instance, one of my students who has a Nikon digital camera borrowed a compact flash card from me, because he had to run out and shoot a protest on campus, and, you know, it filled up his flash card. Well, all the cameras that I have for my students are Canon cameras. So he, you know, put the flash card in his Nikon, you know, used it, and then he gave the flash card back to me, put it into the card reader, and the Canon software that's on the computer saying, you know, I don't recognize this card at all. And it's because for that brief moment he had used it in his Nikon camera.
I see.
So maybe, I don't know the specifics of that printer because I don't have one, but I would think it'd be plausible anyway that the printer is indicating that flash card for that time anyway as being a Hewlett-Packard flash card.
Somehow it modified it some.
Yeah.
Some way.
Now that doesn't mean that those photographs are gone from the card.
No, I can still download them onto my computer.
Right, right. So, I would believe it'd be totally plausible that the printer is doing something to indicate that, you know, that this flash card is being used by Hewlett-Packard device.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. We have about 15 minutes left, maybe a little bit less. Our guest is Brian Johnson. He teaches photojournalism at the U of I in the journalism department. And every once in a while is here, and we talk about cameras and taking pictures. And there was a day when we talked about film. But it seems that over the years we have talked more and more about digital photography, because that's kind of the way that things are going,
yeah,
and more
yeah.
and more people are getting
interested. But we can still talk about film.
But we can sort of talk about film. If you want to talk about lenses and camera bodies and film.
Shooting
and,
methods or whatever.
And shooting, you know, any of that kind of thing. Anything that has to do with either hardware or technique. That's certainly great. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We have someone else here in Chicago. Line 4. Hello.
Hi. Yeah. I tuned in late, so I hope my call, my question isn't inappropriate. The old chemical film cameras used to advertise and that sort of thing. Used to talk about the speed of the lens, a thousandth of a second, and that sort of thing.
Right.
I see nowhere in any advertising or any here no discussions about the speed of the digital cameras. How fast are they, or how do you know how fast they are?
Sure, most of the lenses that are on like the point and shoot variety of digital cameras can have a fairly large maximum aperture. Because the lens itself is so small, because the imaging sensor is so small, that they can have a fairly fast lens. And as far as the maximum shutter speeds go, you know, most of the digital cameras, the point-and-shoot variety, have a kind of a fairly normal range of shutter speeds like you would find on your 35 millimeter film cameras. So, you know, a lot of them will go up to, you know, 500 for the lower end ones on up to, you know, 1,000, 2,000 for top shutter speed for the ones that are a little bit more expensive. So it actually gives you, you know, the same kind of range. And I think the reason that they don't really have that as part of the advertising is that since most people use these cameras in the automatic mode, most people don't even know what exposure is, let alone what the camera is setting or even why they should care. And I think that's why they're really trying to sell the cameras more on the number of megapixels, you know, that the imaging chip has, and also how large of a zoom comes with the camera. That seems to be how they've shifted their marketing for these cameras.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. You know, that's one of the things about that people might be surprised about or sort of puzzled about when it comes to the digital cameras is that they don't seem to do anything. You know, the old right. film cameras, if it's got an automatic film advance or if it's a single lens reflex camera, it makes some very distinctive noises when it winds the film.
Right.
It does that thing when it flips
oh, yeah.
the mirrors.
Absolutely.
So that you know it goes ka-chunk and you know
right.
it's taking a picture. Digital cameras, they don't. Unless you put something in there to make it do that, it's not going to do anything.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely on the Canon cameras, I think just about all of them really, they actually have a digitized shutter sound so that you know when you're taking a picture. I was taking some pictures in church the other day. My wife was doing a little drama, and I thought, oh, you know, the shutter sound's a little bit loud. I'm going to turn it down. So I turn the shutter sound, because it doesn't make a shutter sound, really. I mean, there is a little bit of a sound. But I turn the shutter sound down, and I press the button. I'm like, oh, I don't think the camera's working now. But sure enough, the little image showed up on the back. So it's interesting how, at least for us present-day folk, who knows what it'll be in 20 years, but we're really connected to the mechanical aspects of the camera to give us that feedback, oh, I've just taken a picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is one of these things that I wonder if people have, most of their experience taking pictures has been with cameras that were mechanical and it had film.
Right.
When they get their first digital camera,
right.
that's going to be one of the things that's going to
right.
that's going to cause them some
the first
confusion.
Thing that the first thing that's going to cause them confusion and make them want to go back to film is the delay between pressing the shutter and taking the picture.
That's right. When you're going to be asking yourself, okay, now when I'm pushing the button, but when does it take the picture?
You want to smash it to the floor. I just missed the picture because you were thinking. How dare you think, camera? You know, it's like, because it's trying to set the white balance. It's taking an exposure reading. It's taking the distance. And sometimes it can be a phenomenally long time, and it's maddening.
So that's just something that you have to get used to?
Well, you have to get used to, and there are also some settings you can set so that the camera doesn't have to think so much. Mm-hmm. You can set the white balance manually. You can also, I just lost what I was going to say about that. I know. It also will do auto ISO setting, auto film speed setting. So there's some things like that you can say.
Okay. I'm just and that's one of the things I know we've talked about before. When you pick out a camera, you say, well, go down to the place where they sell the cameras and pick them up and feel them and hold them and see how they feel in your hand. That's
and
one
now
of those things that can you actually try, get a feel for that before you buy the camera?
You know, I would be sure that you go to a place where they can actually give you a working model of the camera and turn it on so you can see how what kind of delay it has. With the new cameras, you need to also look to see how the menu commands are structured so that, you know, you have this great camera, it'll do all these great things, but do you understand it? You know, do you know how to get to that function?
Yeah.
And that's important, too.
We got some other people here. We'll go next to Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Yes, I've got a Sony F707 camera, and I use a Macintosh Titanium PowerBook.
Uh-huh.
And I've got a Canon S9000 printer. One issue that I find is, and even if I'm using the Canon paper, is that pinks and reds tend to print out near fluorescent.
Right. One thing that you can do is, and I've had to do this with some of the pictures my students have worked on, depending upon what you're using to adjust the image, sometimes, like Photoshop, for instance, you can go into the image menu and go to hue and saturation, and you can drop the saturation lower for that image, and that'll make it look a little bit more lifelike again, and not so much like, 1970s artwork.
Yeah. The on screen, the pictures look great.
Right.
But once they're printed out, the pictures seem a lot darker.
Right.
And then the reds and just sort of coral color shirt of my daughter is practically glowing.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. If you can adjust the saturation of the image, if you take the saturation down just a little bit, that can really improve it and make it look more lifelike.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Melvin, Illinois, for our next caller, line three. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Thank you for taking my call
sure.
today. My question is about an older camera. It's a digital that's about 2.5 years old. It's an HP 318. The trouble I have is when I take pictures when the lighting is questionable or not as good a quality, I like to take a lot of outdoor pictures in like in the evening at dusk,
right?
And it doesn't handle that very well,
right?
And even my flash sometimes it won't handle the lighting very well,
right?
Even two what I think are fairly identical pictures, one will be kind of dark and the other one will be okay,
right?
And the question I have is, if I went to a newer camera with more megapixels or what features would I look for that can overcome some of these problems?
Right. You know, I think that the more modern digital cameras have done a lot in the area of the lower light level photography so that they're going to give you a better image. A lot of digital images can get kind of noisy, kind of grainy or kind of speckled when the light level is low. So the kinds of things you could do if you want to stay with your present camera is maybe get a tripod. I don't know how adjustable your camera is, but maybe that would, you know, if you could set it in a mode where it will use a longer exposure, that might help. But a lot of the newer digital cameras have come further along and giving you a better image when the light's low, when the light level is low.
And then do you have the ability to make adjustments? Mine is pretty passive. I cannot adjust
right.
speed or anything to kind of overexpose or underexpose.
Right. You know, you can still, it just is going to depend on the camera. Some of them have a high degree of adjustability, and some of them are just going to be like the camera you have where it's pretty much, you know, it's a passive experience. You know, the camera's going to set all the settings for you.
Okay. Would there be anything that you would suggest, or brand or model number?
You know, all of the camera manufacturers, you know, Olympus, Canon, Nikon, Kodak, they all have their advantages and disadvantages, and that's why I like to have people, as David said before, go to a camera shop and, you know, get kind of the lowdown. But then you can also do some investigating on the web or through magazines and read, you know, what the reviewers have to say about the cameras.
I see. Well, thank you so much for your help.
All right. Thank you. Well, we are going to have to stop there because we've used up our time. I'm sure another day Brian will come back.
Oh, yeah.
Again. Thanks very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here.
Brian Johnson teaches photojournalism in the journalism department at the U of I here in Urbana-Champaign. Every once in a while, he's here on the program. We talk about photography.